Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon, and I'm getting over yet another great snooker final, the English Open at the weekend in Milton Keynes. Terrific occasion. Neil Robertson beating John Higgins 9-8 from 8-6 down, of course. It was a strange final in a lot of ways because I felt on the balance of the afternoon play, Robertson should have been further in front. And I think against most other players, he would have been. John Higgins did his sort of limpet-like stuff and just clung on, really. And then, of course, it all changed in the evening. You can look back and maybe say Robertson maybe went too defensive, maybe protecting the lead. He couldn't score in those first four frames, and Higgins went 7-5 up. The interval came, and of course, it went 8-6. But Robertson then really did attack. He really did play well. He went for it. And, you know, it's pretty simple with Neil Robertson, actually. When he attacks, he tends to play better. When he's on the defensive, he tends to play worse. And he went on the attack and he won. And regardless of the pattern of play during the day, all that mattered was who got to nine first. And it was Neil Robertson. Terrific win, 21st ranking title for him. He genuinely wanted to collect those Home Nations trophies as well because they're all named after legends he looks up to. So he'd already got the Stephen Hendry trophy, the Ray Reardon trophy, and now he's got the Steve Davis trophy. So it's the Alex Higgins Northern Ireland Open trophy next for him. Higgins, of course, was very disappointed in the immediate aftermath of defeat. And we've had a couple of emails, actually. And by the way, this episode will be about looking ahead to the Champion of Champions in the main, but we're going to go through some emails first. I've had a couple of emails about Sunday night. Callum Law said that the English Open was another great week for snooker, which as always was superbly covered on Eurosport and Quest. Unfortunately, as a John Higgins fan watching the final, it felt like there was a sad inevitability about the outcome after what happened in the Northern Ireland Open final. Don't think he did much wrong in frames 15 and 16, but in the decider, with the chance he had, he should have made at least 40, if not more. I know there's a huge amount of pressure, but I wonder if John, who many would argue is the best pressure player in the history of the game, he's starting to feel it in these situations more than earlier in his career. I still think John is capable of winning any tournament, but I do worry about the impact these final defeats may have on him, because if he gets to more finals, the two gut-wrenching losses this season must still linger in the back of his mind. And Alpha Bonzi, on the same subject, says, after John Higgins loses again from Turk with three to play, does he want to win too badly? Should he treat the game like O'Sullivan and Williams? Well, of course, I mean, you're right, it was 8-6 against Mark Allen, lost 9-8, 8-6 up against Neil Robertson, lost 9-8. Tough to take, and the two, I think, are connected as well. And he said afterwards, you know, it proves I can't play at this level anymore. Well, I think most people kind of felt that was a bit of a real reaction, and an understandable one in the immediate aftermath of defeat. But, you know, John Higgins is still a great player. The fact he's got to two finals in a row tells you that. It was a similar story, really, on the evening early on with Neil Robertson and certainly later with John Higgins. They were losing position. They were getting in. And Higgins grossly misjudged a couple of positional shots where he could have continued breaks and possibly won. We can only really... I think you can only really look back on this in a couple of years and say, you know, is this actually a serious point in his career where it... there's a turning point where he can't handle the pressure anymore. If in 2 years' time he hasn't won another tournament, then I think you possibly could look back on it and say it's significant. But if in 2 years' time he's won several tournaments or has been, you know, in several finals and he's still very much a top player, then we'll look back on it maybe as just a bit of a blip. And I tend to suspect he's more likely to be that because this has happened various times in his career. He's had little, you know, peaks and troughs and he's spoken about, you know, maybe I'm no longer a top player and all the rest of it. And then he comes good again. And without picking on anyone, I'm genuinely not doing that, but I did his match against Oliver Lyons in Milton Keynes. And the gulf between those two, when you see a real top player playing their best against a player down the rankings, you do understand the gulf in standard. Now, you often hear people say anyone can beat anyone, which is true if the top player has an off day. But if the top player plays their best stuff, they'll win. And that's why, you know, you get to quarterfinals day, as we did on Friday, and there were so many big hitters. I think every quarterfinalist had won a ranking event, actually. Even like people a little lower down the list, like Luca Brecel, Mark King, they'd still won tournaments. So, listen, John Higgins has got a long way to fall. And on Alpha Bonzi's point about should he treat it like O'Sullivan and Williams, they want to win as much as John Higgins, I can assure you. Whatever they say, they want to win as much. Mark Williams, I think, is very good at handling defeat. And actually, I think O'Sullivan's pretty good at handling defeat. So when Mark, if he loses, he can kind of take that maybe better than some players. But he wants to win when he's out there. And Ronnie O'Sullivan said he was really enjoying the week and he thought he was playing well. He really wanted to win that semi-final. It was interesting, the O'Sullivan-Higgins semi-final. They'd kind of both gone in that decider. There was all sorts happening. They kind of both were feeling it. Maybe that is something that happens as you get older. I think from Higgins' perspective, what was interesting was I interviewed him before the final for Eurosport. And I said, it's 27 years since your first ranking title success. Do you still get as excited by being in a final? And he actually said, I get more excited than ever. And I guess the reason for that is because at this stage, at the age of 46, he doesn't really know how many more opportunities he'll have to win tournaments. But I think, listen, write off John Higgins at your peril is kind of something we've said for many years, 25 years really. And I think that still applies. He's playing good stuff. He's in a good place. I actually saw him after the final. He was with his family. And, you know, he was a bit more chipper, obviously, you know, surrounded by the people who love him the most and much better than sitting in your room on your own sulking. So, you know, he kind of, it will hurt, but it'll get over it, I think. And I think we'll see plenty more of John Higgins as the tournament goes on. In terms of Ronnie O'Sullivan and Mark Williams, of course, Mark didn't play in it. Ronnie lost in the semis. He was in good form, wasn't he, all week, you know, in terms of what he was saying. And that's the thing with Ronnie, you know, he's a little bit different in Belfast. To me, he's a bit like a kind of radio, actually. You know, you could sort of tune from one station to another. On any day, it might be a sort of mournful classical piece, and the next day it'll be some euphoric banger. And that's what the thing with Ronnie. And you can decide yourself whether to turn the volume up or down on the things he says. I'm much more interested in how he plays, and he's playing well. Although it has to be said that he didn't play anyone in the top 32 until he played Higgins, who beat him. So, you know, he didn't come up against any other top players until that semi-final. And that's what he's been struggling to do, I guess, since the World Championship victory last year, is actually beat the real top players consistently, which is what makes next week. And we'll talk about the Champions later. That's what makes next week interesting, because he's in a group where they're all big hitters. And it's a tournament where they're all big hitters. And so I think that's going to be interesting to see how he goes there next week. But it just in general on the English Open, before we move on to the other emails, I really enjoyed the week. There was a great sort of feeling about having crowds there. Early on, they weren't great, but that's not that surprising because, you know, on a Tuesday afternoon, people are at work. And also, if you're going to go to the snooker, people will often target the final weekend because that's when the semi-finals, the final are on, and there's more of a kind of vibe about it. We actually had an email. It's from Malcolm Johnston. Now, he sent this right at the start of the tournament. I think there'd only been a couple of days, so, you know, there wasn't much to go on here. But I'll read it anyway because it's interesting. He said, after watching the opening matches of the English Open, can't help but think the powers that be really need to find this event a worthy home. From the much-slated Crawley and now the saviour of lockdown, snooker Milton Keynes, the number of spectators are pitiful and in stark contrast to the Northern Ireland Open, which probably makes the empty chairs seem worse. As a regular attendant of various snooker events pre-COVID, I know firsthand the ticket pricing is always sensible. But surely taking this leg of the home nations to a traditional snooker area, Reading or Telford spring to mind, it deserves so much more. Well, I think on Reading, Malcolm, I think they'd struggle actually to get all the tables in. That Hexagon Theatre is a lovely venue, but it's not the biggest place. I thought it was right to go to Milton Keynes as a thank you, as a reward for what they did during the lockdown when we had all the behind closed doors snooker. You know, it was a chance for players to play and earn money. It was a chance for snooker fans, many of whom, of course, stuck at home, to have some entertainment. And the circuit ran really well during that time, and they were really good to us in that hotel, in that venue. And actually, in Belfast early on, the crowds weren't very good. They built up, and the final was unbelievable, but they weren't that good. You don't expect that early on in the week. And they weren't great in Milton Keynes, but the last weekend was terrific. And so I'm glad that it went there. And there was a nice vibe, even like I was in the sort of just in the public area on Sunday, just walking through, a lot of people there, a lot of anticipation about the final session. You know, real good feeling about the place. And credit again to Phil Seymour, the Master of Ceremonies, who went out before the final and again very engaging with everybody and just creating a nice vibe before the players came out. It was a good crowd, you know, they got into it, they were engrossed in it, but there was nothing, no bad behaviour or anything like that. So I think, you know, the atmosphere hopefully came across nicely on television, and it was, you know, it was a nice week. I enjoyed it. It was nice. Thank you to everyone at Eurosport and indeed Will Snooker Tour. Of course, many of those guys had spent a long time at the Marshall Arena previous year. It was good to catch up with my good friends in the press room, Sam and Roddy from World Snooker, who would spend all day long chained to various laptops and cameras and all of the things, churning out all their terrific content. And they had a new lad there, Alex, actually, who he's just his first job out of university. He's working in the World Snooker press room, and of course that was my sort of entry years ago into this great sport as well. Had two other emails, actually, both from the same person about Milton Keynes, Frank Reel. I'll read them both out. The first one, he said, I've been going to the British Open in Milton Keynes most days. Well, it's not that it's the English Open, isn't it? In Milton Keynes most days, and nearly all sessions, as I live quite local. The venue is great, but I was wondering, why are the chairs so uncomfortable? They're that bad, I've had to skip sessions just to let my back recover. Do you know if that's the same at all venues? Or do you have any more comfy chairs that you can sit in for a few hours if necessary without worrying, especially if Selby's playing? Is the commentary seating more luxurious as you're constantly working? And then, well, he sent that one, and a few days later, he sent another one. I think you should ignore my first email complaining about the seating at the English Open, as I was there again all day Friday, and I've got to say, apart from some slight stiffness after such a long day, my back was absolutely fine. I know it doesn't make sense. It's not the most most compulsive, but more likely one of your most uninteresting emails to bother reading out. But writing this, I've just returned home from Friday's quarters. I felt it only fair to be completely honest to the Marshall Arena seating department. And also, having the tournament in Milton Keynes seems to have been very successful. Hope it continues to stay there, as it's only a 20-minute drive for me, as all of the tournaments seem to always be north of Watford. Well, yes, so I'm glad that worked out for you, Frank, in the end. You may just have been a bit unlucky with the first place you sat. It's got to be said, seating in venues isn't always comfortable. That's why the Crucible, one of the reasons the Crucible's so lovely, is because it's a theatre. They have to actually have decent seats. Not all sort of leisure centre-type venues, which have, obviously, temporary seating, you know, is that great. But I'm glad, in the end, your back survived. Long-time correspondent James Cook in America is back in touch. He said, it's been a while since I last corresponded, but rest assured, I'm still listening to the podcast, which remains excellent. Thank you, James. It's the Friday of the English Open. I'm really enjoying the tournament. I'm currently between opportunities on the career front, but there's a silver lining in every cloud. My family is back at work and school, leaving me home alone with the Eurosport app, on which I can watch snooker from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. using the time delay and catch up to watch all the matches. However, my plan is often ruined by match commentators, you being one, giving out the scores on the other tables whilst commentating on another game. Fans can surely follow the other matches online if they want to keep up to date scores. It does mean that if I hear the score or result of another game, it does kind of make it pointless watching it, and then I have to go and do something useful, like find a job. So can you please do me a favour and either give a heads up when you're about to reveal another score result or refrain from doing it? Thanks and keep up the good work. Still the best snooker podcast on the planet. Thank you, James. Yes, well, Rob Milkins actually on Twitter called me out for this. He said, stop giving out the scores. I'm recording these other matches. However, in the past, broadcasters and Eurosport on the home nations have been accused of ignoring other matches. Oh, you never tell us what's happening on the other tables. You can't really win with this. Maybe we need some sort of klaxon that we sound, which tells you we're about to mention the scores on the other table. Of course, on TV, the classic thing, sort of on the news, if Match of the Day is coming up, is, and it seems incredibly antiquated in this day and age with people have got access to it, every conceivable piece of information, you know, at their fingertips. But the classic thing is, if you don't know the score, look away now. I remember Trevor McDonald, the veteran News at 10 presenter, once saying that he once said that on the news, and he had a letter from a guy who said that he did look away, but he still saw the scores reflected in his sideboard. There was sort of a glass front on his sideboard, and he was really angry that even though he'd been told by Trevor McDonald to look away, he could still see the scores. I take it on board, James. Maybe we can come up with some sort of way of alerting people, but I think it's quite important to a lot of other people that actually the scores are given out. I know you can find them yourselves, but if there's something interesting happening, then if we're covering the tournament, I guess we want to you know, bring that forward. But clearly there's a balance to be struck, is what you're saying. Now, if you like passive-aggressive emails, here's one from Harry Tumpkins. This is my third email. The previous two have been ignored, but I will have one last attempt. You stated in the latest pod, Karen Wilson is entitled to his opinion. Good of you, as you were interviewing him, and presumably the idea of these is to get some sort of interesting point from them. Only in snooker would a top six player saying he thinks he should be on the main table every so often is controversial. Harry in London. Thanks for getting in touch, Harry. Now, last week we had one of our perennial queries about where Tony Meo is, and Luke Williams has some more news on this. I mentioned that he's, as far as I'm aware, he still is in the jewellery trade. And he said Tony was kind enough to ring me a few months ago after I wrote a letter to him asking if he was willing to share some of his memories of Patsy Houlihan for the book I'm writing. He's in great form, and it was a very kind gesture of him to call me, someone who he's never met, spoken to, or even know of. Full details of the interview will be in the book. He's still in the watch trade and seemed in very good spirits. Well, that's good to know. So Tony Meo's still, as I say, playing a trade outside of snooker, but good to know that he wanted to share his memories there of Patsy Houlihan, who was a bit of a character, and I'm sure Luke's book will bring all of that across. Leon Tricker writes about it, quite an interesting subject here. As I type, I'm listening to you commentate on the English Open semi-final between O'Sullivan and Higgins. Watching the match, my eyes keep being drawn to the decor around the table, the advertising boards, the players' seating and tables, and the carpet. In my opinion, the scenic backdrop for the Home Nations series is far better suited to a prestigious event than many other snooker tournaments. In particular, the World Championship has looked cheap and tacky in recent years, with green bays, blue advertising boards, and red carpet clashing and assaulting the senses. I wrote to you a little while ago about the declining audience dress code over the years, and I feel that the mise-en-scene of snooker venues is another example of standard slipping. I suspect this is primarily driven by sponsors, but I feel strongly that the stage dressing should befit the sporting drama, especially at the Crucible. I'd be interested in your thoughts on the matter. Thank you, Leon. Well, yes, I don't think I agreed with your view about the audience. Well, I think the audience can dress what they like, dressing what they like, frankly, if they paid their money to go. In terms of the sets, of course, in the old days, you used to have flower beds and all sorts, although often they were obscured by cigarette smoke in the arena. I'm not an expert on this. I do get what you're saying about the Crucible, but obviously, you know, the sponsors want the set decked out in their colours, and that was always the case with Embassy. The great mystery over the 1987 World Championship, the set suddenly became blue, and there was a sort of theory that it was because it was 60 years of the World Championship, having started in 1927, but it was actually, I think it was because there was a new brand of Embassy cigarette that was in a blue packet. Because it was kind of looked like an ashtray, really, in those days, the set. So, yeah, we've always kind of had this, but people obviously have their own, you know, personal views and opinions, and we've heard yours there. It's not something I get too upset about, to be honest. I thought the set was lovely in Milton Keynes. I agree, it looked nice. I like the Home Nations branding. I think World Snooker Tour do a very good job of actually making the events look different. It's not easy when you've got so many. It's interesting, actually, just sort of to digress, go on a tangent here. Ronnie O'Sullivan, in one of his various interviews before the event, he made a comment that he said the snooker circuit had become toxic, which I didn't agree with. I think it's the wrong word. I think what it's become, actually, is a bit clinical. It's a bit cold, is another word, maybe, as well, to describe it. In as much as, because it's become more professional, which is a good thing, and we've got more tournaments, you feel it's kind of, and we'll see this in the next few weeks, you feel it's kind of racing from one to another. An example is, you know, when I started in snooker, and even maybe 10 years ago, after a final like that last night, there would have been a reception, there would have been, you know, free drink and food, there would have been a sort of get-together for everyone who worked at the tournament, the winner would be there. As it is, as far as I'm aware, Neil Robertson and his family just got in the car and drove home. There was no great sort of hoo-ha. And even like the bar in the hotel shuts at midnight. You know, they weren't going to, they don't stay open there. So people relaxing after the event and, you know, coming together and having a drink, that wasn't really an option because it finished so late. It never used to be like that. You know, in the old days, there'd be an all-nighter. People letting their hair down, but there's not time to do that now because, I guess, for example, Robbo is, he'll have a day off and he'll be back practicing for the Champion of Champions with the UK Championship around the corner as well. It's an important time of the season. So it's become a bit clinical. It's become, okay, let's get this week out of the way, then where are we next week? But that's because it's become more professional and more successful. There's so many tournaments now, there isn't sort of time to dwell on the one that's just finished. I do also think as well, on the subject, maybe just to wrap up the English Open chat, is this sort of, I'm not a great one for ranking the tournaments and saying this one is more prestigious than that one. The fact is, the audience there, and it was a full house for the final, they chose to spend their money and their time coming to Milton Keynes to watch that match. And hopefully, because it was so exciting, it'll persuade them to come back next year or to go to another tournament. It did its job. And, you know, the English Open is not regarded as one of the absolute majors, but it was a fantastic final. And as I say, it entertained the people that came along and hopefully people on TV as well. That's not really saying anything about the set, but anyway, if anyone's got any views, the Champion of Champions set I'm interested in seeing next week. I think that will be a little bit different as well, because Matchroom, again, looking to innovate and just make things look different, I guess. So let's move on to the big event happening next week. It's the Kazoo Champion of Champions in Bolton. That's a new home for the tournament. It's got quite a bit of snooker heritage in those parts. John Spencer was from that area, and also, of course, Tony Knowles. And in 2021, we've got 16 players congregating to see who will be crowned Champion of Champions. I've only worked on the event the last couple of years. Well, in fact, not at all last year, because I had COVID. I had to watch it. But looking forward to this year. But I remember watching the first edition back in 2013 and immediately thinking, this is a great tournament. The concept is really easy to understand. It's all the winners of the tournaments from the previous season, or the previous year. And, you know, it's got a touch of class about it. The ITV4 coverage is brilliant. Matchroom are brilliant. Be interesting to see how it goes down in its new venue. But it's a classy tournament, this, and one every player wants to be in, and every player certainly wants to win. As I say, 16 players, not all actually tournament winners. I mean, Mark Allen won it last year. He hadn't won a tournament. The reason is, you know, they had to fill up the field because we haven't got 16 different winners. You look at Trump, Roberts and Selby, you know, they're three multiple winners from last season, and also lost a couple of events, of course, during the pandemic. It's absolutely the right thing to fill it up from the rankings. People saying, you know, invite all sorts of obscure winners of amateur tournaments, a complete non-runner. They're trying to sell tickets. This is a commercial thing. They're trying to get a return. So quite right to invite players off the rankings. If you don't agree, my advice is put your own money into setting up a tournament. Don't invite half of the top 16, and then let me know how many tickets you sell. Meanwhile, in the real world, quite obviously, people want to watch the big names. Ronnie O'Sullivan has not won a tournament in the last year, but he's gone in off the rankings, as have Stephen Maguire, Ding Junhui, Stuart Bingham. Of course, Mark Allen has withdrawn, so Bingham actually the last man in. And the draw was made this week, and we have four, well, they're called groups. I mean, there's a debate, a rather pedantic debate about whether they should be called groups, because a group suggests they're all going to play one another. But they're called groups because, of course, they play one each day. So you have a last 16 and a quarterfinal each day. It's a narrative for each day. I think it's a really good idea, because you just get that story every day. Okay, who's won today? And then, of course, the semi-finals Friday, Saturday, the final on Sunday. So we're going to start with group one. They're all interesting, but I think Judd Trump, who's never won the Champion of Champions, would be reasonably happy with this group. It's Judd Trump, Stephen Maguire, Ryan Day and David Lilly. David Lilly, of course, the world's senior champion. Massive week for him. I'm sure he's looking forward to it already. He plays Trump. that's going to be a bit of a baptism of fire. Judd Trump hasn't really come to life yet this season. He's had a couple of setbacks, quarterfinals, Belfast and Milton Keynes. Now, two quarterfinals, it's not bad going, but we're just used to seeing him win. The manner in which he lost those matches is a bit concerning. You know, he was 3-0 up against Mark Allen, missed a red for 4-0, lost 5-3. Against Mark King, just didn't really find fluency. Lost 5-3 there as well last week at the English Open. Surely he's going to come good at some point. And as I say, this is a tournament he dearly loved to win. He's a multiple winner of tournaments. You know, he's won the same events several times. But there's some events he hasn't won, and the two that stand out are this Champion of Champions and also the Tour Championship. So I'm sure he'll be looking to tick those off as soon as he can. In terms of the match with David Lilly, well, Lilly, you know, he does have TV experience, and he's not a complete unknown by any means. I mean, the thing with David Lilly was he was a fine amateur. He was one of the best amateurs for a long time in England. He won the English Amateur Championship, the game's oldest tournament, 1916 started. He won that three times, decided not to turn professional because he had a job, a good job, paying well, and just decided to pursue snooker as a hobby. But I think when the game, you know, really started to take off under Barry Hearn, he just saw the opportunities and he thought, well, if I don't give it a go now, I never will. Of course, he dropped off the tour, but as I say, he won that that World Seniors Championship at the Crucible earlier this year, which clearly meant a lot to him. So, you know, he absolutely deserves his place, but it's a tough match against Trump. The other match, Steve McGuire, Ryan Day, there's two players who have been around a while as well. I mean, I remember when they were on the old WPBSA Young Player Distinction Scheme together alongside the likes of Sean Murphy and Ali Carter. McGuire we've barely seen this season, but of course he's got previous for coming into tournaments that he hasn't strictly qualified for and winning them. He did that at the Tour Championship last year. Ryan Day, of course, got in winning the shootout. His results have been pretty good this season. He's been qualifying, he's been racking up a few wins. Of course, he plays McGuire in the other match in that group. I'm going to predict each group, and I'm going to, this is stick your neck out territory. Here's the thing, McGuire has beaten Trump several times. He beat him at the Masters, he doesn't fear playing him, but my view is that Judd Trump is going to come good at some point, and he loves this tournament. I know he's had some import into the look of it, and you'll see different clothing, and I know that Judd Trump has been certainly asked his opinions, put it that way, on that sort of stuff. He'll be trying absolutely his hardest to nail this. Of course, he lost that final, didn't he, to Neil Robertson 2 years ago, one of the great finals in any tournament. So, you know, it's not exactly, I know, sticking my neck out, but I am going to go for Judd Trump in that group. Group two, this I think is the toughest group of them all. Mark Selby, Sean Murphy, Yan Bing Tao, Dave Gilbert. Now, you know, there's quality all the way there. Selby, of course, the reigning world champion. Sean Murphy has got in actually because he reached the world final. That's one of the qualifying routes. Yan Bing Tao, the Masters champion, and Dave Gilbert won his first title, of course, ranking event, the Championship League, to get in. And he's scored so heavily this season, 19 centuries, really has got a lot of matches under his belt. And I'm going to say right from the off, I'm going to tip Gilbert to win this group. I'm not sure you can say the group of death anymore. It's probably a bit insensitive, but I think it is the hardest group on paper. You know, Yan Bing Tao, I mean, what a tough competitor he is. Every time you see him, you see players having to scrape him off the table. John Higgins did that eventually in Milton Keynes, but, you know, 4-0 up, only won 5-3, tells you how tough Yan Bing Tao is. Sean Murphy, you know, a player I think everyone enjoys watching when he's on song, can absolutely come through. I mean, he's won this tournament before. The strange thing about Selby is he's never won a tournament on ITV. I don't think he's ever been in an ITV final. Now, there's no obvious reason for that, except to say that there have been times, and this event actually in the past has been an example of this, where there have been tournaments around it in China, and Selby has traditionally done well there, and sometimes just hasn't really sort of readjusted to a UK time. Maybe he's been a bit tired in the past, but other times, I mean, last season that didn't apply, just hasn't come good on ITV. I'm sure he'd love to, because these are big events. He did make a maximum in the Champion of Champions a couple of years back, but as he will tell you himself, didn't get any money for it. So it's Selby v Gilbert, Murphy v Bing Tao. Selby will start favourite against Gilbert, but I just get the feeling Dave Gilbert could come through that in what is, I think, the toughest group to predict. I'm going to predict, I guess, the outsider, which is Gilbert. No wagering here, no money being put on. It's all for fun. Group three, some real big hitters here. Ronnie O'Sullivan, John Higgins, Ding Junhui and Stuart Bingham. O'Sullivan, Higgins, former winners of the Champion of Champions. O'Sullivan three times. Bingham's been a runner-up there. And, of course, Ding has only really just come back after a long break. He's been out in China. I've seen people say they think this is the hardest group, but actually, you look at it, O'Sullivan is playing Bingham in the first match. He's got a great record against Stuart Bingham. I mean, I know Bingham beat him at the Crucible when he won the World Championship, but O'Sullivan almost always beats him. He almost always beats Ding. That's another, you know, very one-sided head-to-head. Higgins, of course, has beaten him many times, and he beat him last weekend in the semi-finals. I guess the question is, can John Higgins pick himself up from the double disappointment. He's playing well in general, but can he actually bounce back from that? They're on the last day of the group stage. That's the Thursday. So he's got, you know, a bit of time, week and a half to, you know, to sort of try and just focus on what's ahead. But I don't know. I'm not convinced he's going to maybe be in the best of spirits turning up there. And Ronnie O'Sullivan, okay, he hasn't won a tour mate in the last year, but he is the form man, really, in this event. He loves, it's the sort of tour mate he loves. It's one table. You know, no sort of, it's not overcrowded with people. You can get on the practice table and all the rest. He traditionally plays well in the tournament. And I'm going to quite strongly actually predict him to win that group. And finally, group four. This is a terrific group, actually. Neil Robertson, of course, just won the English Open. Kyron Wilson, he won the Championship League the second one of the season. Mark Williams, of course, Pro Series and British Open winner. And Jordan Brown, the surprise winner of the Welsh Open. So Robertson will play Williams and Wilson will play Brown in the first round. Interesting lineup this. In fact, sorry, no, Robertson plays Williams and Wilson plays Brown. I think that's actually what I said. But anyway, an interesting match to begin with, Robertson and Williams. Very often when a player wins a tournament, they keep that spell going. A top player, that is. And Neil Robertson has got a bit of previous for this as well. Mark Williams, we didn't see in Milton Keynes because he had COVID. Hopefully he's better now. He's more than capable, of course, of beating Neil Robertson. But you do fancy, after what happened last weekend, Robertson will want to keep up that momentum. This is a tournament he really likes as well. He's a former winner. So I'm edging towards Neil Robertson in that match. But the other one, Kyron Wilson, Jordan Brown. Of course, Jordan Brown, this is a real sort of step up into the big leagues being in this event. We saw him in the Players' Championship, completely thrashed by John Higgins. Although that was the same as everyone else Higgins played in that event. It wasn't just Jordan who got nothing out of him. He's not done much since winning the Welsh Open. It's been a bit of readjusting, I think, for Jordan Brown. You know, it's new expectations from other people and from himself and all the rest of it. Kyron Wilson has had some pretty good results this season. Of course, just been in the quarterfinals there of the last event, the English Open, where he played really well against Neil Robertson. He had two centuries. I saw him actually in the bar after, and he was with his brother and some friends, and just briefly chatted to him and just, he was just saying, well, listen, we both play well, someone had to win. He seemed pretty chipper and happy with how he played, even though, of course, he didn't get the result. And I don't know whether he'll be happy or not to know that I'm going to tip him for this group. So I'm going to tip Kyron Wilson to win that group. He's been runner-up before. I thought it was a bit unlucky, actually, not to win it when he played O'Sullivan in the final. So my tips, for what it's worth, and let's be honest, it's not worth much, for the four group winners are Judd Trump, Dave Gilbert, Ronnie O'Sullivan and Kyron Wilson. In terms of who's going to win it, well, I'm sort of leaning towards Trump on the basis that, you know, he's going to presumably start winning tournaments again soon. I do think this is one he's targeting quite strongly because it's one he's never won before. It's one that he really likes. And I think he will like the, as I say, the, we'll see it next week when we get underway on Monday, but there'll be a sort of different look. The players are wearing different clothing. I'm sure that will create a lot of interest. They're wearing sort of, as I understand it, sort of shirts with their sort of nicknames on the back. Not like darts exactly. I think it's a little bit sort of more reserved than that. But anyway, it'll be a talking point. I always say the same thing about the dress code. It's really low down my list of priorities. Some people will think it's a way of modernising the sport. Some people, traditionalists maybe, will be aghast that the waistcoats and the bow ties, or in fact it was ties before in this event, have gone. But that's all kind of froth because it's the snooker that we enjoy. So I'm sort of leaning towards Trump to win the title. But, you know, we'll see. It'll be a great week, I think. It's live in the UK on ITV4 and around the world on other platforms. I hope people enjoy it and I hope people are positive about it. You know, I've already read some strange comments from people saying, you know, oh, the format's wrong or this is wrong or that's wrong. It's not wrong. This is a private promotion. Matchroom can do whatever they want. Simple as that. It's their event. They're putting their money up. They want a return. And they work with the broadcast partners and they work with the sponsors. But this is not a ranking tournament. This is an independent event and the promoters can have whatever format they want, whatever criteria they want. Whatever they want, basically. And I'm sure they do it well. Matchroom Multisport, very passionate, dynamic company. It's all part of the same umbrella, I know. But they, you know, they, because they only do two snooker events a year, you know, they want to, I guess, make it look different to the World Snooker Tour events. But it's the same sport. The rules haven't changed. It's the same game. And traditionally, this event throws up some terrific matches. So I hope everyone will enjoy it. You can, of course, email us, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. We're proud members of the Sports Social Network. Check out their other podcasts. In future weeks, I hope to have a few guests on, rather than me just talking to myself. And there's all sorts of wild talk about a Christmas special involving... Well, I'll leave it at that, because negotiations are ongoing. So next week is the Champion of Champions. And then, of course, we don't stop, really, until Christmas. We've got the UK, we've got the Scottish Open, we've got the World Grand Prix. There's a bit of Championship League that's going to be around as well before Christmas. So, a feast for snooker fans, as it's certainly in the UK, the weather starts to deteriorate, the nights draw in, it gets darker earlier, all the rest of it. Settle down by the fire, real or metaphorical, and watch the snooker. A couple of landmarks, actually, to look out for next week in terms of centuries. Neil Robertson needs one for 800 for his career. Mark Selby, one for 700. Just a couple of little landmarks there. But anyway, that's it. Thanks for listening. And, as I've resurrected the catchphrase, I may as well say it. Goodbye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.